If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now.
I love your show. I just love it.
He calls it as he sees it.
So my daughter turned me on to you, and you're awesome.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub.
You know, as a businessman, I spend my entire day, I work hard for the, you know, make money for my family. So I don't have the time to invest and to know what's going on, you know. And that's why I listen to your show, because you tell it exactly the way it is.
This is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio.
Welcome to the Russ Betts Show, Hour 2. We got an hour in the bank already. If you missed it, you can catch it on our podcast. I don't actually have the podcast address for you, but as with so many things, Google makes it real easy. Just go look up the Russ Betts Show podcast, and it'll pop right up there. Take it right. This is magic how this works. They've made our life so easy. What do we have to even think about? All right, well, we got to start thinking about some budget numbers. Now, for those of you who are new listeners to the show, I do this on the weekend, on Sunday specifically, to keep you informed, but in my day job, I'm a council member in the city of Desert Hot Springs. And like a lot of other cities, we're looking at some, well, dropped revenues as a result of this economic shutdown, as a result of the COVID-19 crisis. We're going to feel it. But if you look across the Coachella Valley, some cities are getting hit a whole lot worse than other ones. And it appears that the two bookend communities, the ones at each end of the valley, Coachella on the east and Desert Hot Springs on the west, are probably going to fare much better than the rest of the valley cities. And part of that is because the economy that's hit so much is the tourism economy. And Coachella and Desert Hot Springs, while Desert Hot Springs has a booming spa industry, and we're going to feel a crunch from that, it's not the biggest part. It's not our big revenue generator. And I'm looking at the numbers here. We're going to see some sales tax reductions. I'm just going to get into a little bit with Desert Hot Springs, and then I'm going to jump into Palm Springs, where the situation is infinitely more serious. But in Desert Hot Springs, I'm now as a council member, I'm being tasked with, okay, take a look. And the number one job for a council member is the budget. That's where every bit of spending authorization is set. Where the city manager, city staff says, okay, council, here's what we want to do. What do you want to do? Here's the numbers. Okay, go ahead. This is what the world's going to look like as we go forward. Now, it gets to be a tough time when the world going forward is, you're going to have to try and do with less money. So I'm looking at a sales tax reduction in Desert Hot Springs, and you know, I have meetings with staff, and I'm looking at, you know, we're probably looking at about $320,000 loss in sales tax revenue. We were at $1.6 million in sales tax in our normal budget, and what we figured is a normal situation, and that's probably going to go down to $1.28 million. And so I'm projecting a 20% drop in our sales tax. Now, it might be more than that because we got the gas tax involved in there, but the prices of gas haven't really come down that much, although a lot of people are driving less. I mean, what is getting a couple of months per tank full of gas? But at least for a starting point, until I see some other numbers, I'm going with 20%. Now, on our transit occupancy tax, I'm projecting we're probably going to lose $800,000 transit occupancy tax. And that number's a little bit ahead of what staff's offering. But I'm figuring we're going to lose about 50% of our transit occupancy tax. So instead of collecting $1.97 million, which was a nice, healthy number, we're probably going to collect about $1.17 million. So all in all, I'm figuring the city's probably going to face a 10% tax adjustment that we're going to have to make. And there'd be some, you know, all that is assuming those numbers are within reality. And we're going to get more detailed staff information. You have to understand that every city is at budget time. That budget time comes right about now. You set your budget and you work on it from January to June 30th, and then we were in good economic times. I mean, it was a real easy time to budget. Say, yeah, okay, great. What do we want to spend it on? And not what do we have to cut? It's when you have to cut that it gets to be more serious. But anyhow, we've got those considerations, and so the city is going to have to figure out how to make up 10%. And so I'm sitting there saying, you know, assuming that the numbers that I'm coming up with are reality, where do you go get those cost reductions? Where are you going to get which is roughly about, I came up with anywhere from $1.2 million to $1.5 million, and that's out of a $21 million budget. So where are we going to get those savings? Staff offered up their worst case scenario as $1.8 million in loss. Now, if you're in another city, it's particularly Palm Springs, and you're listening to those numbers, you're going, wow, wouldn't it be nice if that was our only, the extent of our problem? Well, let's go look at those other cities. It's not a pretty picture. You've got Palm Springs. So amid the coronavirus pandemic and the related shutdowns, Palm Springs is anticipating a budget deficit of about $75 million. And I got some notes here because I listened to their council meeting. I listened to it carefully. And basically, I went through it. They had a five-hour budget study session. And they're expecting a deficit of about $76 million. And it was termed as an enormous deficit. Now, it could be more than that because they're estimating next year what they've got to cut out is about $47 million. They already lost $29 million just in this year. Before they even get to the June 30th cutoff date that kicks in the new year, they've already lost $30 million. That's in hotel shutdown, rental car shutdown, all that stuff taking place. And they've only made up about $10 million of that through the savings that they've implemented, which was basically, you know, holding off on some projects and cutting spending real quick, and they managed to save $10 million, but they still got a $19 million deficit just in this current year. And what they're proposing is just, they're just going to have to use reserves for that. They have some reserves, that's the good news. They're going to have to use the reserves to make up $19 million of this year's loss. But now going into 2021, next year, they got to figure out where they're going to get $47 million. And their budget has basically gone from $125 million in revenue down to $80 million in revenue. You know, it was real easy before. Take in $125 million, spend $125 million. Well, now it's they're spending at a rate of $125 million, and they're only taking in $80 million. They've got to do something. So I'm watching that, and you know, it's a really tough time to be on a city council when you're facing those kind of numbers. And if the economy comes roaring back, well, the numbers are going to be lower. But of course, on the flip side, if the worst case possible projections hold up, well, it's going to be a higher number than even the $47 million they're projecting in Palm Springs and the same throughout other cities. Now, you can hear the public comment already started, and I didn't sit through all of that public comment. There was a lot of it, but the part I caught was, hey, don't cut this much-needed program. It does so much good. And I remember when our city was in very, very dire straits, and I kept hearing people say, hey, don't cut this, don't cut that. And from the dais, we basically had to say, look, we're looking at these numbers, and if we don't cut, we're not going to have a city. And I would love to continue that program, but if we don't make those cuts, get this clear, we aren't going to have a city. And our city came within $450 of running out of money. At one point in time, we had just $450 available cash in the bank. Now, I was talking to a fellow colleague on the city council with me at the time. He's no longer on the council, but he went through all that with me. And he's looking at the Palm Springs numbers, and he's looking at our situation. He says it looks to him that they're in the same degree of financial crisis as Desert Hot Springs was in 2010. The only difference, of course, is that Desert Hot Springs got out of that situation with some wildly reckless spending and the hiding of some very bad numbers by a former city manager who wasn't giving the council the full picture, was actually taking steps to hide it from the council. Whole another story. We can talk about that anytime you want. Call in and we'll give you the details, but right now I'm going to continue. So in Palm Springs, it's a completely different story. It's the COVID-19 shutdown that's hit the economy. I mean, Palm Springs is a tourism town, and there's no tourism. In the past 15 years, they did a great job building that city up. I can remember when the conversation was, hey, Palm Springs is dead. The new place to be is Palm Desert. Well, a few councils back, they've worked really hard to reverse that trend. I remember Paul Lewin saying, hey, we got to get stuff going here in the summertime. We can't just roll up this town in the summer. And they've been busy all the time, even with the heat, splash party, whatever else they had going on. They made it work. And So, you know, now a big part of that revenue is gone. And so what happens to a swim center, a library, an animal shelter, public safety, park maintenance, city salaries and city service levels? I mean, that's what's going to be have to be worked out. And the public, all this is going to be amid the public that doesn't have the numbers, some of them that don't understand the situation. And they're going to be saying, hey, don't cut my program. Don't cut this program. Please do not cut this program. You can't do it. How heartless. How cold of you. These seniors need this, or these kids need this, or how are we going to get along with a library? We have to invest in our future. Well, when you're looking at a huge total near collapse of your city finances and a huge budget deficit, you know what? Something's got to get cut. Now, it took Desert Hot Springs 13 very intense budget meetings. Get that number again. 13 council meetings where we looked at only the budget to work through it. And I think Palm Springs at this point has had 2, maybe 3, and they're having to work through it. And we had a situation where some people weren't quite grasping what was going on and how serious it was. So we had a city manager there, Bob Adams, who was particularly adept at budget and finance and turnarounds for cities. That seemed to be his forte and reason he landed in Desert Hot Springs to help us through the mess. So what he did was said, hey, guys, here it is. Here's the spending. And here's where we got it. Here's the revenue. And let's start moving some pieces of paper around here. And each one of you go home and come up with your plan where you're going to shuffle these numbers, because you got to come up to at least zero. We don't have any reserves left. We can't print money. So you have to take this revenue and match it to this spending. So you got to, and so you worked it out on paper. And it was a real eye opener for the council members that hadn't quite grasped that, how serious the situation was. And of course, that was out there for the public to go through also. And it helped them understand, as each person tried to work through a plan, wow, there really isn't enough money. What are we going to cut? And that was the only way. The first step is a realization is that you have got to make some cuts. And you can't sit there on the dais and play politics and say, you know what, I'm just not in favor of cutting anything. I can't believe how cold and heartless you are. You're all in this one together. You all got to solve it together. You're going to have some spending priorities, but it's going to be cuts. And you can't go take somebody to task calling cold and heartless. And the public has got to understand. You must take the time. You can't just sit there and say, what about me? What about me? And I understand that's the way it works, but it's not going to solve the problem. I mean, in Palm Springs, the overall budget was $121 million. The anticipation is a $47 million shortfall. $47 million has to come from somewhere. Where are you going to get it? Now, the city's hotel tax was $37 million is what they were expecting this year. That's gone. Rental cars, city gets revenue from those. If you've looked around the airport and seen how many rental cars are parked everywhere, you know, when those cars are parked there, they're not generating any income for the city of Palm Springs on the rental fee, the sales tax on that rental, whatever a special airport tax applies to cars rented at the airport. And they're certainly not out there filling up hotels, and they don't represent people spending money. It's just huge loss. So that's gone. Airport revenues are gone. I mean, the airport brings money into the revenue. So, all right, we're going to get into a little bit more of this. A lot more of this, because this is really important. You've got to understand this stuff. All right, this is Russ Betts on iHub Radio coming to you from a very quiet downtown Palm Springs. It's still locked up. You see some signs of relief. Sometime the economy's coming back, and we'll be back with more ourselves.
Live from Palm Springs.
Hey, everyone, listen to this, please.
10 years ago, you know, this was a thriving, booming economy, but we're not going to that extent. This thing isn't a total crash.
I want to tell you, you got the radio voice, my friend.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, that's really honorable.
Now, here's Russ Betts on iHub Radio.
All right, so we're back. We're talking about Palm Springs. The city council's already declared a fiscal emergency. They've got a hiring freeze on current job vacancies, and they've cut some other operational costs, and basically they've achieved short-term savings of about $10 million. They were facing a $29 million loss in the current year, so that $10 million in savings means this year they're going to be in the red $19 million. Then they got the whole next year to worry about. And that $19 million, by the way, is going to come out of their reserves. That's pretty much the way it looks like. Now, they may make some other decisions, but I think David Reddy, the city manager for Palm Springs, made it pretty clear, you know, we're out of time to make any other adjustments. That's just what we're going to have to accept. And that's what reserves are there for. But, you know, you're looking forward to ahead. What's going on? Well, they had Measure J. Isn't that going to bring in a bunch of money? I mean, you can already hear those comments. Well, thank goodness we got Measure J. Well, Measure J is a sales tax, and it's down 30% in its revenues to the city. So, you know, that's not great. They've had to cancel. They're looking at canceling 5 projects. I don't know exactly what those projects were. They're contained in the budget. I didn't go look, but... A big debate is, what do they do with this beautiful downtown park they're going to have? And so they've decided that there's far enough along in the development of that park that there's some things they've bought for it. They just can't return, and it just makes sense to go ahead and finish it. They could do a modified downtown park plan, which will save about $4 million. And who knows, they may have to say, okay, we'll finish it later. But that's one of the things they're looking at. And then they ran through a few scenarios on savings. And, you know, one was total personnel savings of $8 million, or another one of $11.5 million. Remember, they've still got to get to $47 million. So you take $11 million out of your personnel, and you still have some cost when you lay off employees. People don't realize this, but you have to offer a 3-month severance. You got unemployment insurance, and your health insurance continues for 6 months under the employee contract. So... cutting employees isn't swift and quick. They're going to have to watch this really closely. And, you know, that was part of the problem is you get a number 1 week or, you know, and then the next week you get a different number because it's ever changing. And then people don't grasp that concept. That was a big problem we had in Desert Hot Springs. So wait a minute, I thought the number was this. I said, well, look, you got to get it through your head. These numbers are changing. Staff's doing as good a job as they can to get you this stuff, but there's a lot going on here, and it's not going to be perfect. So just start doing your job. You're heading to zero, and realize zero, the target number you're getting at, may move a little bit. You know, how the heck can anybody predict where the economy is going to be? Now, you can go say, well, we're going to go with this bright, rosy, everything's going to come back, slowly build back up, and the economy is going to be good, so we're going to budget for that. Well, what if that doesn't happen? You're going to sit there and say, hey, wait a minute, what happened? I thought, well, you got to understand, this is a moving target. I'm just looking at what hung us up and what caused so much consternation in our cities. We tried to work through this. You know, the public was really supportive in Desert Hot Springs. One of the issues that came up, and this is just a minor issue, but city staff thought, well, you know, here's a really good way to show people how terrible it is. Let's turn off the water to the parks so that the grass at the Little League field, everything else goes brown and crunchy. I think staff just loves a brown, dead grass at a park as a good visual reminder to the public that, hey, it's bad out there. Well, our council had decided, no, absolutely not. The water on a park doesn't cost that much, and if we're having tough times, at least the Little League can have a proper field to play on. You know, as a city, it was in trouble, not them. We're not going to punish them by turning off the water. Well, despite council orders to keep the parks watered, staff was doing what they wanted to do. They didn't turn it off. They just turned it down so far that it wasn't enough to keep the grass from going brown and crunchy. So finally, we embarrassed council or the city staff at a council meeting. You're not supposed to do that. But we finally said, listen, turn the water up to the point that the grass is green. Don't turn it off. Don't turn it down. Don't play games. The grass in the parks is, and so you'll have some of that going on. Anyhow, now cities across the Coachella Valley are having issues. Coachella, I heard Mayor Steve Hernandez basically give the same speech we can. You know, we're fortunate that, you know, we don't have a lot of hotel revenue to lose. We don't have a lot of sales taxes. Of course, you know, we'd love to have had the sales tax and the that type of booming economy, but we're basically bedroom communities. And until the property tax numbers drop, which is about an 18-month reset, if we end up the same thing as in 2008 where the housing market crashes, well, Palm Springs, they're getting, what, 30, well, they're getting a big chunk of their money out of the, I got it here somewhere. I must have put it away. All right. You know, our city gets a big chunk out of property taxes, and those are pretty stable. That just keeps coming in, and until they reset, that's about an 18-month process. So, And we've got a healthy amount of reserves in our city, so we're looking okay. And I think Coachella is also. La Quinta is heavy on tourism. Certainly Indio with the big concerts is. Rancho Mirage is sitting pretty good. They got enough reserves that they can probably just ride this one out. I think Indian Wells is having some concerns. Anybody that relies on tourism as their main income generator has got some problems. What you got to do is you got to look, and the first thing to do is get to a baseline. When everything else is crashing, where is it going to stop? Because cities never run out of money completely. They always hit a point where here's as low as we're going to go. Figure out where that point is, and then get your spending and your expenses down to there, and then build from that. That's the key. That's what you got to do. That's what will get these cities through this crisis. And then we're going to get you through the rest of the show. We got another half hour coming up. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs.
Thank you for educating so many of us. I think you're the best.
We are the people in your neighborhood.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is The Russ Betts Show.
All right, we're back. We're looking at the budget picture in the Valley cities, and I've half jokingly been saying that the strong cities may end up acquiring the ones that are having a major financial fallout. And for example, Desert Hot Springs, waiting to purchase Palm Springs if things don't work out. Of course, they'll work out in Palm Springs. They have to. The city will get to a point where it's reached high. Here's how much money's coming in, and here's what we can spend. And unlike a business, a city can always count on revenue. At some point in time, a business's revenue can just completely and totally dry up, and they're done. They're out of business. That doesn't happen in cities. The pain in a city is getting your services that you're providing down to the level of the income that's coming in. Now, I'm half jokingly say, well, we may have strong cities end up acquiring the ones that are, you know, not make it or have trouble. And, you know, I may not be alone in that idea. I'm looking at a commentary. It says it's time to cull the herd of weak local governments. It says the crisis has put a number of cities, counties, schools, and special districts at grave economic risk. In the coming weeks and months, they'll be looking to the state and federal governments for help. But an op-ed in something called Zocalo Public Square, and a columnist named Joe Matthews, well, he opines that there might be a better solution. Let them fail, and then let the surrounding cities acquire those cities. He says, citizens are represented by so many different governments that you have a shrinking media trying to cover all those governments that he said with so little scrutiny and so many governments and so much duplication and everything else it costs, maybe the best thing to do is some consolidation that would, put things together. Now, the other thing would be, hey, well, let's all raise taxes to keep all these city governments afloat and all these special districts. And so he's saying before anybody considers any taxes, the first thing we need is fewer local governments. And then second, take a look at the remaining local governments to make them more powerful and resilient. And anyhow, so there you go. Now, California is facing a huge budget shortfall. It's the biggest in the state's history. I remember years and years ago, the late Senator John Benoit telling me that, wow, I don't know how we're going to solve this $24 billion deficit we got going on here. This is huge. This is catastrophic, and the Republicans and the Democrats can't seem to get together. Well, then came along Jerry Brown, and Jerry Brown had an act for telling his Democrat friends in the state legislature, hey guys, sorry, we can't do all that spending you want to do right now. We got to cut some money. And Republicans, I'm sorry, you don't like taxes, but you're going to have to get used to them because we got a looming $24 million budget that's a big threat to the state. So Jerry Brown got that under control. And in fact, he got it to the point where the state had $41 billion. Was it $41 billion in reserves? Had a lot of money in reserves. Well, those are gone now. And now the state's anticipating a $54 billion budget deficit. So, Gavin Newsom walks in with some great times and some great ideas. this hits, and all of a sudden he's faced with a huge, huge mess. And in addition to the reserves being wiped out and the $54 billion deficit, you know, some of the things that are weighing in on the state is $7 billion in new costs for things like health and human services programs. I mean, they're pumping out a lot of services to help people. And then you got $6 billion in additional spending, most of it related to the COVID-19. So, and then on top of that, you got a state unemployment rate that's expected to be 18%, with most people experiencing a 9% loss in personal income. And then a significant drop in new housing permits is being predicted. So, you know, it's not a pretty picture out there financially. The state's going to have to adjust. And the idea is it going to be able to, you know, what'll help it adjust is if you get businesses open. But if you go look at the map, businesses opening is a slow and long, drawn-out process that is still months away with some of the restrictions the governor has placed on it. And, you know, they're talking about cuts to schools and tax increases on the horizon. I don't know how, you know, how tax measures are going to fare up when you got double-digit unemployment, but we shall see. I'm looking at, you're talking about, let's skip ahead here, because we're talking about consolidation of cities and, you know, trying to have to cut back. And I've been watching the Mission Springs Water District. There's a new contract they contemplated. And, you know, the kudos to the Mission Springs Water District, they took steps to put their meetings online. They were notoriously quiet. You couldn't watch them online. And they held them at 3:00 in the afternoon when nobody could really be there to pay attention. Well, now they're doing a really good job of putting them online. Of course, everybody is, because all your meetings have to be accessible by Zoom. If there's one good thing that's come out of all this as far as city councils go and meetings go, it's that anybody, the amount of participation is greatly increased because all the meetings have gone to video broadcast. But of course, that means you can have a little closer look at things. And up in Mission Springs Water District, they're considering a new contract for their general manager. Apparently, his old contract's coming up, and they're not just considering a new contract, they're considering a 3-year contract. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't think you should be offering a 3-year contract. There's no need for the water district to be locked into a 3-year contract. The general manager's been there a long time. He's not going to leave if you tell him he's going to go to being hired at will. That's the trend, at least as I've seen it, in any situation out there is, you know, most of the people in these positions are hired at will. They've got a severance clause saying that they're entitled to 18 months of salary if he's terminated. 18 months is wildly excessive. That should be maybe 3 months. 3 months termination is a lot of termination. You know, 18 months, that's, and at the guys, that's, you're looking at, you know, $400,000, $500,000, $500,000 termination clause in a contract. And then what makes it especially bad is that this 3-year contract extension is coming up just before an election. You know, that's going to make it financially impossible for a new board to change the general manager, because it's going to cost too much. I understand you might like a guy. In some circles, that's called nepotism. You know, taking care of a friend right before you see some change coming along. What if Mission Springs Water District, for example, finds itself in significant dire straits financially because of this economic crash? Now, that may not happen. It may happen. But locking yourself into a 3-month contract and tying the hands of a future board of directors says, wow, I'd really like to get rid of this. You know, we've got to make some changes here. This is too rich. We can't afford this anymore. Sorry, he's locked in. It's going to cost you way more to get rid of this guy than to keep him around. I don't mean it's not like, you know, talking about the general manager if there's a bad guy. It's just, this is business. This is what a board of directors is supposed to do. Look out for the ratepayers. And looking out for the ratepayers is, no, we're not locking in anybody to a 3-year contract at a time like this, especially with a $900 a month car allowance in a small little water district. And then I don't know what the salary is, which is an issue, because they have gone to a public meeting on this one They don't just get to vote on this in closed session and come out and announce what they did. This needs to be voted on in public. And for it to be properly voted on in public, which they're planning to do on Monday, they have to publish the salary that they're talking about paying. Now, I know through looking up Transparent California website, this general manager costs the district about $300,000 a year. It's not a salary, but with a salary and benefits, it's about $300,000 a year. But they didn't publish any of that anywhere that I can find. I may have missed it, but if they have not published the amount of the salary 72 hours in advance of the meeting, unless somebody has some exception that says they don't have to, which I'm not aware of, they can't go through with any vote on Monday. You can't renew a contract where you don't have the amount of the contract included in the public record that was released for the meeting. I may be wrong. I saw the $900 a month car allowance, and I saw the 18-month severance package, but it's all bad. You know, it's all bad. There's already some protections in California law that says you can't fire a general manager within 90 days of after an election, because you got these new board members come in and they want to, you know, hey, let's get rid of this guy or whatever. You know, if there's some type of turnover and disposition of the board, and you know, state legislature says no, that's not going to happen. But here they're purposely right before an election. I mean, just months before an election. They're setting this up to where they've got a 3-year contract, so any new board, no matter what they want to do, off the table as far as any type of adjustment, unless they really just want to. It's not good. And I'm done focusing on that one, but it's not right. You know, I touched on this a little bit with these landlords facing renters not paying their rent, and some of the numbers are showing that, well, with the renters who have been collecting some pretty generous unemployment benefits and the stimulus package have gone ahead. They haven't seen maybe the huge numbers of renters not paying. I've heard from other landlords that said, geez, 50% of my renters didn't pay. That may have corrected itself now. I don't know. And they've got rental eviction ordinances in place where you can't even serve them a notice, and we'll wait and see what happens, because that deadline's coming up at the end of this month. See what happens on that one. But, you know, you wonder what's going to happen. Is the bank say, hey, you know what, sorry, but I don't care if you have a renter in there who's not helping you make this mortgage payment, we're coming to collect. And here you go, start paying up. And do we end up with homes in foreclosure? And then what happens? The bank is stuck with a house with a renter in it and they can't get out? They can't get the property? I don't know. So, and I don't see any proposals to canceling property taxes. The government's sitting there telling you, you can't kick your renter out, but they still want the property tax. It's a difficult world, and so anyhow, you know, yeah, we got something else here. I just pulled this little news bit out of here. It says, what is America watching when it comes to cable news? They always come out with these ratings, and they come out every quarter. It tells you, you know, where are people going to get their news, and you always hear these people every time you you have a conversation with somebody, invariably you're going to hear, oh, well, what are you watching, Fox News? Oh, no, I don't watch Fox News. I never watch Fox News. Well, I'm sorry, but the numbers don't bear that out. Fox News, Sean Hannity, who I think the left probably can't stand to no end, is the top rated. The more people are watching him, and it's 4.48 million viewers in the ratings. And then next is Tucker Carlson with 4.36 million viewers. That's also Fox News, in case you weren't watching. And then you got the Fox News 5 at 5 or something like that. That's 4 million viewers. Then you got Laura Ingraham with 3.7 million. And finally, you get down into another network, Rachel Maddow with 3.4 million. And then Fox News Brett Baer kicks in. Fox News kicks back in with Brett Baer with 3.2 million. And then you get the MSNBC O'Donnell at 2.5, MSNBC Hayes at 2 million, Chris Cuomo on CNN at 1.8, Tapper, and then Cooper Anderson is at 1.5. I don't know what any of that means, but there you go. You got the numbers. Who's watching what? You know, somebody tells you, no, I don't watch Fox News. Well, you know what? maybe they don't, but a whole bunch of other people are. And if that bothers you, hey, don't get mad at me. I'm just reading the numbers. This is Russ Betts on iHeartRadio.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
No way. That's incredible.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
There's no way I could get through all of this that I have for you today. I think it's the case every time I'm here. There's way more to cover here in the Coachella Valley and elsewhere. I'm going to put aside a major editorial I was going to read. It's probably just as well. But there's something I want to get to, and it's the school district. But I'm going to get to a couple other things first. I'm going to peel this note off of here. I'm going to sit there right in front of me, highlighted in yellow. Don't forget, you're going to get to this before the time runs out, and I'm going to keep an eye on the clock. But I want to get to a couple other things. There was a... Sorry, I won't talk so fast. There's a report that comes out by the Coachella Valley Economic Partnership that says the Coachella Valley's tourism-based economy is bleak and must be diversified, and that's the report out by CVEP. And Councilwoman Jan Harnick from Palm Desert is out with the same message in an opinion piece appearing in the Desert Sun, and it says Valley Voice. It's a Valley Voice piece. Coronavirus makes clear the Coachella Valley's economy must evolve. And the economy, basically the case is, hey, we were so heavily dependent on tourism. When something like this comes along, well, we're in trouble. I mean, look what happened when BNP Paribas tournament canceled. There was a lot of jobs lost. You know, the guy who had work lined up for that, he said, wow, I just lost a week's worth of work, but at least there's Stagecoach and Coachella. And then Stagecoach and Coachella canceled. And then the golf tournament canceled. And then the dance parties in Palm Springs canceled. And all the events and the conventions. And $2 billion of revenue was pulled out of the local economy. And the big hit there is the jobs. I mean, that's what we're here for. That's what that economy is about, to make life worth living for us here in the Coachella Valley. So, you know, you got CVEP came up with this. And Joe Wallace, who's the executive director at CVEP, said it could get worse. The longer we stay locked down, the more jobs that will be lost and the more business that will be lost. And so, you know, we're going to have to take a look at that. And he and Jan Harnick are making the same case that there needs to be some diversification. You can't just rely on all everything else. So I'm going, well, what diversification is out there? And they said there's a few things in technology and education. But the one I always look to, because that's where my career was manufacturing. I mean, if we had more manufacturing, that would be a very healthy addition to our economy. Those are the best jobs for families, for otherwise, for pay. Those are the best jobs. I mean, I knew somebody who worked while the economy was booming. They were working at one of the local restaurants, and I'm sure they are happy they made the switch. But they were working at a local restaurant, making a good pay, but they went to work at about 3 o'clock, right when their kids are coming home from school, and they didn't get home till after midnight when the kids had already gone to bed. And if they wanted to wake up half tired because they're still relaxing, because, you know, they sleep in, they can get the kids off to school, but they were basically not seeing them. Versus taking a manufacturing job where they show up for work about the same time the kids are going to school. They get home about the same time the kids are getting home, and then they have all evening together. And they're making more money, and they got better benefits. So how do you get manufacturing to the Coachella Valley? Well, for starters, number one, on the top of the list, the way to get manufacturing to the Coachella Valley would be to move the Coachella Valley out of California. California is not the place somebody thinking the manufacturer is going to look to go to. And if you got a manufacturer, you know, somewhere up in San Francisco or LA where they're complaining about the government up there, and they decide they're going to pick up their manufacturing and move it, well, they aren't going to pick up their manufacturing and move it to somewhere else in California. They're going to go to Arizona, Nevada, or Texas. It's friendly states. So if you want to get this valley boosted, and manufacturing is the way you're going to do it, until you can convince the state to change its very anti-business ways. And I know there's people out there that disagree with that, but I'm going to tell you, I'll sit down with you, have as long a conversation with you want, pointing out how hostile California is to doing business. Ask Elon Musk. He's ready to move. So I want to get onto the school district here. I've got kids at home, and you got to try and figure out, you know, you used to just drop them off at school, make, you know, get ready, wake up, get breakfast, come on, let's get in the car, drive them, drop them off, get them there on time, and get them there before the first bell rings and you're doing good. And then make sure you don't forget to pick them up so they're sitting there waiting for you when you're supposed to be there. And then you kind of have, maybe have a look at their homework, but things have changed. Now, I'm deeply involved in the lessons plans. And I'm going to tell you, I am very, very impressed at the level of learning. My grandson's in the honors program for every subject he's in. And we're going through some of these lessons on the Civil War, on what was the other one? Just all kinds of stuff. On the history in particular. And I'm going, you know, and the reading assignments for comprehension. I'm telling you, some of this stuff is college level learning. I don't remember it being like this in high school. I thought I had a pretty good education growing up in California and going through education system in the 70s and the 80s. And I remember what it was like at college, the degree of thought. And so I am really, really, really impressed with the level of learning that's going on at the schools. And the one subject he's really having trouble with is math. He's okay. He's in honors math. But, you know, I just told him there is just no hope for me to help you with that math. So you're on your own. Do what you can with this other stuff. I can sit down there and work through it. But, he got mad at me. There's some multiple choice questions. And we read through this paragraph for comprehension. Then you've got to answer this question. And he wanted it to be one answer. I said, no, no, I think it's this other one. He says, no, it's this one. I said, no, I'm telling you, I think that. So he hits it and, bah! You know, it's wrong answer. And he's mad at me and storms off. You just made me miss. You made me miss a question. So, well, you're the one supposed to be doing the homework, not me. And it's been a real eye-opener for me with how much time and energy and effort goes in. And, you know, on the history lessons, it's been real straightforward. I've always worried, you know, people interjecting their political biases into the reading of history. And it hasn't been that way. It's basically the lesson plans as I remember them. But, on the subject of slavery, there's a whole bunch more emphasis, I think, on, you know, the people in the country that were working to end slavery. I mean, a huge emphasis I noticed on these history lessons when it came to slavery. And talking about they really got into detail on the legislative efforts in Congress and the five major acts that went through to, you know, to try and settle this big brewing issue that finally led to the Civil War. But throughout the entire discussion, you're talking about, you know, huge numbers of people in the country who just said, sorry, slavery is just not acceptable. And yet the Fugitive Slave Act, where even slaves in free states were told that, even if you're in a free state, we can come grab you. All right, well, I got off into some of the lessons, but anyhow, kudos to the people who've had to, at the school districts, who've had to jump in and figure out how to keep these kids educated. And I just want you to know, you're educating some parents along the way as we've gotten involved in these Zoom meetings and classrooms, and you can see this stuff going on. And it's not homeschooling, it's schooling coming into the home. All right, we're done for the day. This is Russ Betts coming to you here on the iHub radio station here in beautiful downtown Palm Springs, joining you every Sunday from 10 a.m. till noon. And just really enjoy having you, all you new listeners out there. We are able to track you here because it's digital radio. We see the numbers growing, and we're thankful for that. And we'll be back with you next week.